Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you do have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or if you're feeling a little radio shy, feel free to email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. And before I introduce my special guest for tonight, I just want to make a few announcements. And I just want to remind people that we will be having our Healing Weekend coming up very shortly, and let me just check and see if I'm here together. Can you hear me there, Joyce?
I can.
Okay, good. Okay, we're having our Healing Weekend coming up, and that will be coming up in April, and it's going to be near Washington, D.C. It's going to be a really dynamite kind of weekend. We're going to have wonderful guest speakers coming. So if you'd be interested in this, just write to me at bonkay@aol.com. Those people who came to our group get-together back in September and October, it was really overwhelming, the friendships that were made and the healing that was done, and to see how people have moved on in their lives. And talking about that Healing Weekend, I want to send my love to Jen, who's on her way to recovering, and we all love you, Jen, and if you're listening to this show, we're glad you're getting stronger every day. Also, my newsletter will be coming out tomorrow. So for those of you who would like to read about tonight's show, you'll be reading that in there. And also, you'll be reading about the change of the show, which will be starting back again on Sunday evenings in January. So I'm looking forward to returning back to Sundays. It'll be at 9 o'clock instead of 10 o'clock. And hopefully that will work out good for you. But, of course, you know, you can always get the podcast anytime after the show is broadcast. So without further ado, I'm going to be introducing my guest, Joyce Short. Joyce, I want to welcome you to our show.
Well, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here.
And it's a pleasure to have you here because I've been hearing about your work for the last year, first through my good friend and support group member, Jillian, who first introduced me to you and the work that you did, which was really so impressive to her. She said it really, you know, changed her life in many ways.
She likes
to think of it as life-changing, so I know that it's important work. And also through some other people who are part of the same network that you work through, you know, Donna Anderson's network of Love Fraud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our friend Marianne Glynn, who comes to our show a few times each year. So, as I say, I've heard so much about your work, and I'm so happy after talking to you and reading so much about you to have you here.
Thank you.
So, welcome to the show. And first of all, let's talk a little bit about you and maybe give us a little background about your background.
Well, I, as you would know from reading my book, encountered a man who basically lied about everything. And the whole relationship was based on all smoke and mirrors. And the one thing that he didn't lie about was his sexual proclivities, his direction. He was not gay. But I can certainly relate to women who are lied to about whether or not their sexual partner is gay. It's a defilement to be lied to in order to induce sex. And the feeling that one has that results from that transpiring can be devastating. Can lead to coercive, it's a form of coercive control, which in fact creates post-traumatic rape syndrome. It creates a form of PTSD known as complex PTSD. So I endeavored to try to figure out my own situation, did a lot of research. There was no internet at the time when this happened to me. So, unfortunately, there wasn't a lot of information about sociopaths and psychopaths and the things that make up antisocial personality disorder. So it was a little bit more time-consuming to actually get to the bottom of what happened to me and how it affected me and what I needed to do in order to heal. And once I put that all together in my mind, I thought, well, you know, the best thing to do would be to help others who are suffering from the same ill effects of similar situations. And try to make it possible to actually change the laws and recognize that when someone induces sexual exploitation, that they're not seducing you, but they're actually creating a form of sexual assault, and to do whatever was necessary in order to change the laws and stop that from happening. It becomes much easier to accomplish through the internet, and so unfortunately, internet dating has created a new crime, and a very prolific one. Hopefully, we'll be able to create some catfish profiling laws, and stop the abundant crime from continuing to take place.
I think that's so true, especially in view of all of the internet dating that's going on, and you hear so many horror stories, and you even hear the horror stories within our own network of our straight wives. For instance, and I'm sure that you can relate to some instance like this, of course there's a number of dating services out there, including one very popular one, ChristianMingle.com.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with that one. But it's a very large network for Christian women,
yeah,
you know, who want to meet other men. And
I hear a lot
of
plenty of fish complaints.
Yeah, a lot. And one of the women whose ex-husband is on there has HIV.
Oh, my.
And some innocent, unknowing woman is going to, you know, who we actually met on there. You know, like I say, it's just amazing to me that any kind of person could go on here misleading people into who they want to think, and especially with the men in our, who are married men who are in denial of who they are, they're going to continue to look for women to marry. And what better place to find them than on a Christian dating site where, you know, not having sex is an okay thing. You know, women wouldn't recognize necessarily that that's the problem.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's very scary, right?
Interestingly, the laws on defrauding someone into a sexual relationship when you're when you have HIV, the laws are different from state to state. And you can actually look up, you can find it on my blog. There's a site that will tell you what the specific laws are in your individual state. So if that
mm-hmm.
happens to you, in some states they will severely prosecute the offender. In other states, they don't pay any attention to it at all. But you'll be able
now,
to
is that just
tell.
With HIV, Joyce, or is that with other sexually transmitted diseases as well?
It honestly depends on the state, Bonnie. Some of them will, are much more tuned into prosecuting people with STDs of all
mm-hmm.
kinds. And other states, some things that are only life-threatening. So it will vary from state to state. One of the big problems in dealing with any kind of sexual crime is that criminal law is created by each and every state individually.
Exactly, and that's such
they
a problem.
They call it by different names. They punish it under different circumstances. So there's no continuity from state to state. The only thing that we can look to create some cohesive sense of what actually constitutes consent comes from, it's called Model Penal Code, and it was created back in 1962 by the American Law Association. And it was their attempt to try to standardize penal codes throughout the United States. It's not something that the state is forced to adopt, but they did a wonderful job, and a lot of states have adopted different aspects of Model Penal Code. Most of them have adopted the concept of consent, and the Model Penal Code concept of consent is that consent is ineffective if it's induced through duress, through deception, by force, by direct, by deception. These are things that create that criminal act. So when someone deceives you, they're not seducing you, they're assaulting you. And if, in fact, the laws of that state have adopted Model Penal Code.
And I think that's a difficult concept for women to understand. So maybe you can help a little bit with this. You call it Rape by Fraud, and that's the name of your blog, rapebyfraud.com, and it's a wonderful blog with lots of information, including a petition that I hope all of our women will sign, you know, to get these laws changed. But when people hear the term rape, and I'm not just saying our women, I'm saying in general, you know, you always think that it's an act of violence. Do you run across that as far as people questioning the definition?
Absolutely. And what's interesting is that the state laws have changed, and in the majority of states, violence does not have to be present in order to charge the act of rape. Now, not every state calls it rape. Some states call it rape. Some states call it sexual assault. Some call it sexual misconduct. Some call it sexual battery. So one of the challenges in standardizing our concept is it would be nice if everybody got on the same page and used the same terminology. I use the term race simply because it is the generic term for the act of having sex with someone without their consent. If you look at the It's On Us pledge, which came out about a year ago, maybe a little bit more, maybe about close to 2 years ago at this point, it's endorsed by the White House, and the very first clause in the It's On Us pledge is how you identify sexual assault. And it states very clearly that non-consensual sex is sexual assault. Now, if you look at Model Penal Code, you'll see that Model Penal Code states very clearly that sex induced by deception is not consent at all. You can give permission, but just giving permission doesn't mean that you've consented to the act. There's a very big difference between nodding your head and agreeing and understanding what you're nodding your head about. And in order for the perpetrator to clearly have consent, they must know that you are aware of what you're consenting to. And if they've defrauded you in some way, deceived you, tricked you, you don't know it, but they know it. They know that they've used trickery in order to, what we call, vitiate your knowing consent. And when that takes place, your consent is not legally valid by any stretch of the imagination. When you look at statutory rape, you see the perfect circumstance having to do with consent. Because statutory rape, for the most part, is about the lack of consent, not because the person didn't agree or didn't give permission, but because they aren't capable at that age to provide valid legal consent. And therefore, what happens to them is considered rape. Is it violent? No, not necessarily. The person could be, you know, very, very much inclined and interested. There's a young man that was prosecuted recently. His name is Zach Anderson, for having consensual sex with a young lady who lied about her age. She lied and said that she was 17 when she was actually 15. And in his state, he probably would have been able to claim a rape by fraud defense to statutory rape. But in the state where the sex act actually took place, which was 20 minutes away from his home and across the border in another state, the law did not apply, and he was charged with a sexual assault. So,
because it was in interstate lines, do you think?
Because he didn't take her over state lines. It's because the laws in the state he lived in and the law in the state she lived in was different. So now the act that he performed wasn't different, but the state's concept of that act was different from state to state. And in his state, which I believe was Ohio, he would have been able to plead rape by fraud defense. In other words, this young lady lied about her age. Therefore, she was actually defrauding him of sex. He, on the other hand, so, you know, the laws of rape by fraud work both ways. And I'm constantly being, put down as a result of my my advocacy on this law, people calling me this horrible word called a feminist. Oh, my God. I
wish that was the worst of what I was called, so that's okay. People call me a lot
I'm
worse,
a humanist,
but that's okay.
Yeah, I keep saying I'm very much a humanist. This is not a feminist law. It's going to protect men just like it protects women. A lot of men get defrauded by women in foreign countries who want to come here to the United States or to come to Canada and are basically just using them for immigration fraud. And they'll, you know, I know several people that are on my blog that have, you know, gone through that mishap and have, you know, been married to women who have actually been married to other people. And they might be married to somebody back in Cuba, and they want to come to the United States, or and so they're pretending not to be married. They come here to the United States, they get married to this person, and lo and behold, then, you know, they the person finds out that they're actually married. And if, in fact, they've had a child that resulted from that marriage, then extradition is waived. They automatically become a permanent entity here in the United States.
So I think it's interesting also that you're part of the network with Donna Anderson with lovefraud.com. And I know Donna herself went through a situation where she married a man who was a bigamist. He had other wives also. And would that be also considered the same thing?
Wholeheartedly. There was another woman who recently brought a case that was also on love fraud against a fellow. They created their own blog, and the fellow's name was Steve Guido. He called himself Steve Gatto, and he claimed that he was a psychologist. He claimed that he was a Marine reservist. They found, I believe, 12 people that he was involved with all at the same time. He claimed that he had some type of terminal cancer, and he was, in fact, a bigamist at the same time. So an attempt was made to bring a bigamy charge against him, and unfortunately, the statute of limitations had run out, and they were unable to bring the bigamy charge.
So tell me, in your experience, because, you know, you work so much with this, Joyce, do you see people getting prosecuted with this? Are they jailed for it? Have you seen cases made into any kind of, you know, warnings to people?
Well, you know, right after my book was published, about 3 months after my book was published, Donna contacted me about a woman that she had met and asked whether I felt that her case was a rape by fraud case. The woman's name was Michelle Lewis, and she had been defrauded by a gentleman by the name of William Allen Jordan, who was a notorious bigamist. Also a pedophile, and he had lived in the United Kingdom for a number of years. He was actually incarcerated in the UK. He was found guilty on charges of both bigamy and pedophilia. And they just, after he served, I think, 2 years of a five-year sentence, the authorities just drop-kicked him across the Atlantic back to New Jersey, where he was from, and the authorities didn't contact, the authorities in the UK failed to contact the authorities in New Jersey. So he did not appear on Megan's list, even though he probably should have. And Michelle and Donna and I, the three of us actually sat down with the police to bring a charge against William Allen Jordan. Now, my sense of why it didn't prevail is because, and the reason that Donna and I went is because, you know, we felt that, unfortunately, even when you bring a violent rape case, you have maybe about a 26% or less chance that the police are even going to pay attention to you.
Wow.
And this was not a violent rape case, so it was even more problematic to get the police to actually pay attention to the victim. But we felt that if Donna and I were there with her, and I brought my book along as well, and also wrote an analysis of the law, and we both had blogs, so we could be pretty vocal if the authorities didn't move appropriately on the case, and we, you know, certainly made them aware that, you know, that would be the likely scenario. But the charge that they brought, I felt, was a deliberate attempt to fail to prosecute the man, because the charge that they brought was sexual assault by coercion. And, in fact, he had not committed coercion in the least. In fact, what he did was just the opposite of coercion. He seduced the woman. So my sense of it was that the prosecutor really wanted this to fail. They prosecuted Jordan on other charges, the same lies with which he defrauded her of sex, he used to defraud her of money. And they did, in fact, find him guilty of defrauding her of money. So he was found guilty on that charge. He was also found guilty of something similar to impersonating a government official. He pretended to be an operative of the British Defense Ministry. So on that charge, he was also found guilty. So right now, he's serving a sentence. And
what is the sentence that he's serving?
3 years. And as a result of the efforts that Don and I made in order to get publicity for the case, the assemblyman in New Jersey actually noticed and wanted to bring about a law in New Jersey. When I originally spoke to Michelle, I said to her, look, you know, I believe that you have the basis of the law in New Jersey. And if they don't prosecute it, then I believe that we'll have a good shot at least bringing the law. You know, it might not help you prosecute him, but it might at least cause attention to this issue and enable us to get a law passed that will help women in the future. And sure,
we have a caller who's calling in. Do you mind if we take a call?
Sure.
Okay, let's see. Hi, this is Bonnie and Joyce.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm just calling in. Joyce has been a great advocate for me. I was violently raped and went to the police and basically got no help at all from them. From someone I met online dating on Plenty of Fish.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely something that needs to change for.
Now, was this the first experience that you had with him, or did you
yes.
go out with him a few times
well,
before this
no,
happened?
I actually was dating him for about 8 months when he decided to rape me, not vaginally either. If you know what I mean, and
mm-hmm.
drag me across the garage floor, and then as I escaped to capture me again and pull me by my hair, and continued to, throughout the relationship, lie to me, cheat on me with multiple women. At one time, I think there were six of us he was sleeping with unprotected.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but when I went to the police to get help from them. First off, the police officer was half my age and someone that one of my grown children had gone to school with. And
mm-hmm.
second of all, they wouldn't look at any of the stuff I showed them because they said it could be circumstantial. And I've come to learn through Joyce and through reading is that rape is the hardest thing to prosecute anyone for because they say it's circumstantial when it's really not. You know, that to have to...
Consensual. Yeah.
Convict these people of this is so hard.
Yeah.
For anyone to
it is,
to
and
get
I think that's probably
point.
One of the reasons why so few people, so many people don't even report it because
right.
of what you have to go through, and you're made to feel like you're the victim. You know,
right,
if you've done,
yes.
if you've been the victim, all of a sudden they're pointing a finger. Well, didn't you do something to create this situation, or you were seeing him for 8 months, and now all of a sudden you're crying
sick
rape
on the floor. I mean, I was sick. I was
mm-hmm.
unable to even get up and move at the time, but. But the feeling that I had, first off, was when I left there, they said that all that I could do was to have him admitted over the phone, that the pictures that he took while raping me on his phone, they wouldn't look at. He had taken pictures as he was doing it.
Oh my God.
The fact that he pulled a huge clump of my hair out. They said, well, I could have done that myself. So if I didn't get him to admit it over the phone, then there was nothing they could do. So at that point, I wasn't going to dare have them question him and have him know for sure that I reported him and then be victimized even more. I mean, that's like poking
mm-hmm.
a rattlesnake. I either wanted him arrested or I didn't want him to know at all that I went to the police. Because, I mean, that's just like poking a rattlesnake, you know? If the police aren't going to do anything...
How did you get rid of him?
I ended up leaving eventually. But
he didn't go after you, or
no, he let me go the next morning. He kept me overnight there, and then I begged and pleaded that I wouldn't tell the police and stuff like that. And I ended up going to the police. But he's had a girlfriend now for the past 15 months since we've been split up, and I come to find out from her that this past summer he abused her and got arrested, and she dropped the charges. But he threw her down the steps and pulled her out of the house by her hair because she wouldn't meet with a swinger couple that he invited over without letting her know. So he's got two restraining orders against him from years ago. So here's a predator that's online, meeting women, and continues to get away with this.
So, Joyce, what options do people have in a situation like this? You know that a guy is a predator. You've been victimized by him. Others have been victimized. The police aren't doing much of anything, and he's just free to keep doing it.
Yeah, there are two things that you can do. Number one, and I hope that we can gather some momentum in order to do this, this victim, and I'm not going to mention your name.
Thank you.
this victim, we'll call her Barbara. How's that?
That's good.
Okay, so Barbara... can certainly speak to her legislators and try to... Barbara met the person on Plenty of Fish. She can go to Plenty of Fish. She can let Plenty of Fish know that they should be removing him. She can also bring civil charges if the person has assets. Because when you bring civil charges, the lawyer wants to get paid, and the only way that they get paid is if they win some kind of monetary judgment and they have the actual assets in order to pay. That's one of the things that Donna had a problem with. She won a monetary judgment, but she can't get her hands on the money that Montgomery has. So, you know, the judgment doesn't really serve for any useful purpose other than...
Joyce, let me ask you this. In a case like Barbara's where there was violence perpetrated on her, I mean, should one of the first things she does is get a protective order?
In the state of New Jersey, quite frankly, the minute you make a sexual assault claim, there's
mm-hmm.
a thing called Michelle's Law, I'm sorry, called Nicole's Law, that operates, and immediately you're supposed to receive a restraining order. Even prior to a conviction, the minute you bring a sexual assault claim against a perpetrator in the state of New Jersey, they are automatically supposed to issue you a restraining order. They did not do it in Barbara's case.
No, and then at that point I was scared to do it because then he would know I went to the police after I swore and begged and plead for him to let me go and that I wouldn't. So,
now you're free.
Against what I told him.
All right.
Yeah, but I'm not free because he's broken into my apartment 3 times.
Well, then now you need to do
that.
But Barbara, now you have a new reason. Now you need to do it.
I moved 1,000 miles away to get
out of
the
state. Well, then you don't need to do it,
No, I moved.
You'll find somebody
closer. I moved so I wouldn't have to face that ever again. But I had to uproot my family and move out of fear because I wouldn't come out of my house. And Joyce knows that I spent 6 months locked up in my bedroom.
Unfortunately,
it's just horrible.
Small town. Lived in a small town,
mm-hmm.
And in a small town, you're constantly seeing the person who's harmed you, and they have access to you unless you live in a gated community. And don't want to walk past your gate.
And I remember one time last February actually telling her that he drove down my street when he didn't have to at 9 o'clock at night. And I was in a panic. There was no reason for him to come down my street. There's nothing that concerns him down my side street.
Well, he was trying to intimidate
right
you.
After that.
Yeah, but he was trying to intimidate
stalking,
you.
Stalking
you. Mm-hmm. But let me ask you a question, Barbara.
Later.
I'm just curious to know this because I work with a lot of women who are what I call wounded women, and I always
mm-hmm.
tell them that if you jump too fast back into a dating scene, that you're really exposing yourself if you haven't healed yourself from your previous wounds. But you were dating this guy for 8 months, and
mm-hmm.
were there any indications, and I'm not certainly, believe me, I've been in horrible situations myself. I judge no one because nobody can find worse situations than I've been in. And I'm honest about it. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
do you feel there were any red flags that would have made you think maybe this person has a problem while you were dating him?
Yes, from the get-go. But I had just
mm-hmm.
come out of a marriage where my husband was verbally abusive towards me and I was in no condition. In fact, the woman that's with him now, everyone he picks has just come out of a marriage.
Bad relationship, right.
He picks what my friend called broken women. Broken women he picks.
Right.
And
that's why he tries
to get you to be swingers. He tries to get you to be a swinger. He wants you to have relations with his friends. He doesn't have great friends. People don't really like him. He's very wealthy, not as much to his own doing, but through inheritance and stuff like that. Thank goodness he has no children.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd
like to make a comment about the reason that people don't regard the red flags.
Mm-hmm.
Why you basically in a relationship might turn a deaf ear to the red flag. And I really find it objectionable when people are called to task for the fact that they missed the red flag or didn't pay attention to it. You know, when you're a sociopath, you basically don't have emotional empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Emotional empathy is that knee-jerk reaction, oh, my God, that person just fell off the chair, and your heart goes in your mouth, and you rush to their aid. A sociopath does not feel that. If somebody falls off a chair, they might laugh. They might ignore it. It really depends on their mood at the time, how they're going to react. But what they're not going to do is they're not going to feel an emotional connection to what's happened to that person. Sociopaths have radar for emotional empathy. They can pick you out of a crowded room when you have a strong level of emotional empathy. And that emotional empathy enables you to care and love and bond because the chemistry that goes on in your brain that creates emotional empathy also creates trust and bonding. It comes from a combination of your brain's infrastructure and the neuropeptides and hormones that exist in your brain. Things like oxytocin, vasopressin, dopamine, serotonin, all work together in order to bond you to the person you care about. And Mother Nature created all of this infrastructure in your brain in order to help you couple so that we can raise our children into adulthood. Our children, as mammals, develop very slowly. An elephant is mature at 25 years, but at 4 years old, they can pretty much get through the world on their own. You know, they might not be sexually mature until 25, but they're able to, you know, walk through the forest and find their way around. But they, you know, but a human child at 4 years old, if you left them in the forest, you know, they would have absolutely no chance for survival, or very, very little chance for survival. So Mother Nature made human beings so that we had chemistry in our brain that bonded us. And that chemistry, when you are given a situation that looks peculiar, it enables you to forgive. It enables you to look the other way. And you don't think twice about it. It's just inherent in your nature. And so overlooking the red flags is really a pretty common and understandable condition.
Well, my counselor, if I could say, also reiterates what Joy says, is that we see other people through our own filter, our own eyes. And I had no idea what someone like that was, or that they existed.
Well, that's
so
true.
I'm
certainly not faulting you, because I've gone with plenty of unsavory men in my own life that were,
yeah,
you know, toxic kinds of relationships.
Yeah,
and we always think that we love them enough, we can change them, and that they're
right,
going to, you know.
Right.
And one of the things I have a mantra on my page, my website, is you can't fix a broken man, but he can break you.
Yeah,
and I say that to women, because, you know, we're always trying to be the fixer-uppers. We always feel if we love someone enough, if we're a good enough woman to him, he's going to see the light and become the man of our dreams. The truth
that
is, these men know how to break you.
It will also happen to men, by the way, who are empathetic men. And unfortunately, there are two things that can result that make it even more difficult to get out of the relationship, even when something really bad happens. One of them is called a betrayal bond. And in fact, in a betrayal bond, your brain chemistry that Mother Nature has supplied you with works overtime to keep you bonded into that relationship. And even though you on one level know that there's something very wrong, the fact that the relationship could be breaking away might make you cling even tighter to the relationship. Another chemically induced bonding is called a misattribution effect, and that results from a heightened amount of adrenaline that happens during something frightening or something that's problematic. I'll give you an example of a misattribution effect that's probably one of the easier ways to relate to it. If you go riding on a roller coaster and you're with, you know, a guy, you're with a date, and, you know, before you get on that roller coaster, you might feel friendly toward that guy. And when you get off of that roller coaster, after the two of you have gone up and down and upside down and, been frightened to the quick, you might be holding hands with that guy as you're walking away. So that's a basic example of a misattribution effect.
Barbara, from your last experience, because of all the terrible things that not only happened to you, but how it affected your life and having to move and upsetting your whole life, I always like to ask women, are there lessons to be learned here?
Yeah.
Maybe you could give our women some advice, you know, on what you've learned from this.
First off, listen to anybody that gives you any warnings that you don't see. Like I said, I warned the girl he's with three times. I've shown her things. Now she's chosen to go back and to stay with him. And I, perhaps it's betrayal bonds, but I don't understand who would want to be with a rapist. So I do feel that if someone comes forward and warns you about someone or something that you don't see, you should seriously consider that a possibility and to look at people's actions. Look at how they act. When my mother passed away when I was with him and he didn't seem to care at all, I texted him on the phone and said, my mom just passed away. And he goes, sorry to hear that. I'll see you tomorrow. I mean, that right there should have been a red flag that we're not dealing with somebody normal. And when you feel it in your gut, to believe your gut.
You know what, Barbara, let me tell you a problem of the, I was going to mention the problem of the first one that you mentioned, which I 100% agree with you. I always tell, you know, because the women that I'm working with, I work with women who find themselves married to, you know, gay men, unknowingly that they were gay when they got married. And sometimes these men just want to hide who they are, and they're never going to come to terms with it, and they'll just keep getting married. So we always say that if we know a gay man is going to marry another woman, let her know. The problem is that we found, and I think that you will agree with this, and Joyce will too, is that when somebody else falls in love with him, he has a whole line story about how you're crazy, that you did everything wrong, and that, you know, you're the one who's, you know, nuts.
All my friends told me to get away long before I did, and I didn't listen because I didn't want to see what they were saying. I didn't want to believe what they were saying. So, like Joyce said, oxytocin had a death grip on me. And
when you're involved in the relationship, you don't see it as clearly as the people that are around you. They don't have the chemistry going on in their brain that enables you to be forgiving and be understanding and be coping. They're not affected chemically the same way that you are. So it's very difficult for you to recognize it while somebody else that is watching or could.
But also, these guys are so manipulative, they know how to convince people.
Exactly.
You know, their new partners who have fallen so much in love with them that you must be the crazy
brain
one.
Chemistry. Yeah.
I was manipulated and gaslighted to over things that I saw with my own two eyes that he would tell me I wasn't seeing.
Exactly.
Without
we have the same thing. We call it gay lighting.
Yeah, without even knowing what they're doing, because most sociopaths, I don't think, recognize, you know, I'm manipulating the brain chemistry, but they are, and they know how to do it, and they do it very effectively.
Consciously think of it, but they know they're doing it. You know, a lot of these guys are sociopaths, and they're trying to, you know, get what they want out of the relationships, or their narcissism. They're just feeding off of you whatever you're giving them. Or a combination of borderline sociopath and narcissistic. So some of them have no consciences or limited consciences, or they see life through their vision, which is totally, you know, their life, which is totally wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that you'll be more careful in your next relationship, Barbara?
Well, if I have any, I have no interest in that. This has done
you need time
me
to heal. Exactly.
Well.
Yeah.
I need a long time. Yes, and unfortunately I have to hang up because I have to get my son to
Barbara, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Really appreciate your insight and your
You're
kind
welcome.
Words. I wish you all the luck.
Okay,
thank you so
thank
much.
You. Thank you.
Bye-bye,
Barbara.
Joyce. All right, bye-bye.
Okay.
Yeah, so sad. So many horrible stories out there. You know, Joyce, I just wanted you to mention, let's talk about your blog and your website so that women will know about your book. You have the book, Carnal Abuse by Deceit.
Mm-hmm.
And this is available on your blog. Joyce is very out there social media-wise, much more so than me. But if you go to her blog, which is fraudbydeceit.com, you can find the book there.
The blog is stopraperbyfraud.com. I try to keep it simple.
Okay, because I see here on something here it says rape by fraud, so I apologize. Stop rape by fraud, right? .com?
Yes. Or rapebyfraud.com. Either one of them, it'll come up.
Oh, either one, right? Because I had it up as rapebyfraud.com and I have it up. Okay, so either way, you can get to the blog. And when you get to the blog, there's some really wonderful things in there, including Joyce's author bio and a link to buy the book right there, which I'm going to be doing tonight. Your blog post, which you have on there, a newest blog, can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I try to touch on different aspects of the law and how it relates and how people can heal, how, you know, what is actually going on with the person when they're experiencing the relationship and how they can break away from it. Sorry, but my cat and my dog are chasing each other.
That's okay.
But how people can break away and how people can recognize what's going on and how people can heal. It takes a lot of fortitude. Romantic love is a form of addiction. It's no less addicting than alcohol or drugs. The only difference is that we're not imbibing it. The chemicals are already existing in our brain. We just never thought of it that way before. Once you can understand it, then you can think of that relationship as an addiction, and you can do what you need to do in order to abstain. And that's what no contact is about. If you don't have any contact with this person, then the ability to hook you and retain you and to for you to continue feeling the pain and ruminating will end. And the other thing is to raise your endorphin levels. Even though you're not being fed the serotonin and dopamine that made your brain feel loved and in control of your life, there are other kinds of hormones that could give you back that control and self-esteem. And if you go out and have exercise and oxygenate your brain and get your endorphins pumping, and a lot of people, and Barbara alluded to it, she literally was in bed for 6 months. And just getting her to, and I would tell her, you know, just get up and dance. Turn on that radio. Get up and dance. I don't care if you want to. Get up and do it anyway. You need to move your body. You need to pump your endorphins. You need to go out and force yourself back into the world, force yourself back into doing things so that you can reclaim your self-esteem and reclaim your life. What happened to you is not who you are. It's an episode in your life, and you need to reclaim your life and refashion your life in the manner in which you want it to move forward.
And I'm really hoping that you'll come back again on our show, Joyce, when you are willing to do so, to really talk about some steps women can take as far as rebuilding their lives, because that's such an important aspect of healing. Sometimes you just lose hope, and there is hope. You know, we've had so many successful, wonderful restart over stories. But as social worker, I'm sure you could really help us with that.
In the meantime, you can read it in my book.
Well, that's your first step, and I want people to go to this blog, because also I want you to sign the petition. Joyce needs just a few more names to make it over 500. I know that I signed this petition a couple months ago. And, you know, I'm going to put it in our upcoming newsletter for women to just go there. And this is such an important, you know, petition. Now, this is for New Jersey, correct?
Yes, but once we get it done in any state, it helps us to get it done in every state. And
oh, no, absolutely. But I'm saying, do you have to be a Jersey resident to sign this?
Absolutely.
I hope not.
Absolutely not. Absolutely.
Okay, because I signed it. I'm not a Jersey resident.
Yeah. The change.org position supports the law, which is 3908 in New Jersey, which is a sexual assault by fraud law. And tonight I posted an additional law, which is a catfish profiling law. And so I'd love for people to read that new law and give me their input. So that we can tweak it and create a law that people can pass in their, take it to their legislators and get it passed in their states. Because so much of what goes on today is a result of catfish profiling that happens in internet dating.
Can you please say what that means, catfish profiling, when people hear that term?
Okay, I think that many people are aware of what phishing is online. It's P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. And it's basically creating a hoax online in order to defraud someone. And when it's a romance scam, we call it catfishing. It's actually spear phishing because it's using an individual approach to a person. And that historically has become, was known as spear phishing. However, recently, a couple of guys created a movie called Catfishing. And there's a story. I'm coming out with another book very shortly, and it will give you the comparison between why they call it catfishing and why it's actually catfishing. And it will help, I think, to move forward if we can pass a catfish law, because that way we can stop the internet scams that are so prevalent in society today. And that, I believe...
I know many of our women have met their gay husbands through internet dating.
Yeah.
And it's very convenient when you're not that close to someone and you're not living quite close, and then you only see each other so often, then you get married.
Yep.
And you haven't had any real time with them or experience, and they're looking for a cover, they're looking for a beard. And this is certainly not reflective on all gay men by any, you know, not even that ballpark, just the ones who are looking to hide who they are. And
well, my new book is going to give you the things to look for in order to avoid being catfished.
And when's that coming out, Joy?
Probably in the end of January.
Great.
The end of January.
When you get it out, you'll just let me know, and I'll be happy to put it in my newsletter and let women know about it and post it on our, you know, support group room.
Great.
And I just want to thank you so much and remind women now that you can learn all about Joyce on her blog. You can learn about her. You also have Twitter, right?
Yes, Twitter. It's @short_JM, @short_JM is my Twitter handle.
I'm not real experienced with that one yet. I'm going to work on that. But other people who are on it know what it means. You have your blog, and you also have your website, right?
Facebook page is Carnal Abuse by Deceit, and my blog is Operate by Fraud.
Okay, so they can find you, and I'm certainly going to put all these different ways of finding you in our upcoming newsletter coming out this week.
And they can make a difference in whether or not we can pass the laws. So if they look on that blog, sign a petition, look at the new law, let's get it done, let's get the legislators involved and get laws passed to stop this nuisance hurting so many people.
Well, thank you so much, Joyce, for such an informative hour. It went so quickly, and I've learned so much by reading about you, and I'm going to be learning a lot more. And I hope our other women will also take advantage of this. I know that, you know, for some of our women already who have read your information and worked with you and learned about you in the past, they told me just how wonderful your information is. So we'll just keep trying to spread that word. So thank you so much, and I'll look forward to seeing if you'll be kind enough to come back again in the spring, and we can talk more about your new book at that time.
I'd love to, and I'd love to hear more about the get-together in April.
Okay, I'll be happy to send you that information too.
Fantastic.
All right, everybody, we're going to say goodnight, and thank you so much for listening to the Straight Wives Talk Show. And everybody who needs support during the holiday time, make sure you write to me at bondk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to hook you up with support during this very tough time. We have Pain Pals waiting for you and all other kinds of supports. All you have to do is let me know, and remember that I'm only a click away. So without further notice, I'm just going to say goodnight. Have a wonderful night. We're going to go out with the Beatles song, Blackbird, which reminds me of our women. Joyce, good night, and love to all of our women.
Good
bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly into the line of a dark black night.